From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, Do You See What I See? Remote viewer Russell Targ joins us, a classic Coast to Coast show. Well, that powerful attack that overwhelmed computers at U.S. and South Korean government agencies for days was even broader than initially realized, also targeting the White House, the Pentagon, and the New York Stock Exchange. My oh my. Other targets of the attack included the National Security Agency, Homeland Security, State Department, the NASDAQ stock market, and the Washington Post, according to a very early analysis of the malicious software used in the attacks. Now, many of the organizations appeared to have successfully blunted the sustained computer assaults. The Associated Press obtained the target list from security experts analyzing the attack. It was not immediately clear who might be responsible or what their motives. South Korean intelligence officials, however, believe the attacks were carried out by North Korea. The attack was remarkably successful in limiting public access to victim websites, but internal email systems typically unaffected in such attacks. Kevin Mitnick, former hacker and now consultant, with us right now. Kevin, this was a big one, wasn't it?
Yeah, good afternoon, George. How are you?
Good.
No, it was kind of unusual because of the breadth of the attack, hitting a lot of U.S. sites, and then eventually a couple days later hitting several of the South Korean sites.
What did they do? Create software and then they attack this malicious software? What is this stuff?
In this case, they used a worm to infect thousands of computers, and they caused these computers to join what we call a botnet, so hackers could remotely control these computers, and then directed it to attack these particular websites. And then at first they had like a smaller list of five or six government websites, and then over each day they just kept adding more sites. So this type of attack is really not unusual. It's the only unusual part is that they were hitting the government and South Korea, but it was very amateurish. I mean, this has happened several times in the past.
No, but as you say, it's amateurish. What happens if it really becomes professional, Kevin?
Well, you would think that they're not going to do what they call a distributed denial of service attack, that they would target systems to gain intelligence, to gain information, to plant malicious code that is covert enough that it's not going to be detected. Doing a denial of service attack to bring down websites is really it's so uninteresting. It's like it's a malicious attack, but what is a foreign nation going to really, how are they going to leverage this attack? It sounds like it's more like hackers or what we call script kiddies that are, novice hackers that are doing this, for attention, to get their hack played out in the headlines.
Interesting. Kevin's website, kevinmitnick.com. Kevin, thanks for the advice. Always, Kevin Mitnick. That popular website, it's called Neopets, has a reputation for being kid-friendly and kid-safe. Owned by the media giant Viacom, Neopets lets its members, roughly 25 million people, adopt cyber pets and earn points by playing games to purchase items for them. Nearly half of the players are between the ages of 8 and 12, although some are as young as 6, and they communicate with each other while they play. But Neopets has been hit by internet pirates, according to Christopher Boyd, the director of malware research, FaceTime Communications. The scam, apparently, takes advantage of kids willing to pay big for a magic paintbrush. It's a rare and pricey item that lets kids change their pets' colors. And you just need to be careful if your kid's playing around with that website. A D.C. metro operator was suspended after he was caught texting on the job in a video posted on YouTube just weeks before a deadly crash on the subway system that killed 9 people. A Metro spokesperson says that the driver was suspended for 5 days without pay after the clip of the June 5th incident taken by a rider surfaced. He is now back at work after serving that suspension. The spokesperson stressed that the infraction occurred while the trains were operating in automatic mode. Now, since that deadly June 22nd crash, All Metro trains there are being run manually. Rates of suicide, murders, and heart attacks will go up as the economy continues its downturn, according to experts. The predictions are based on an analysis of the Lancet of economic changes and death rates in 26 European countries over the past three decades. Rising unemployment, for example, in the UK could mean at least 290 extra suicides. An Oklahoma couple has been arrested for investigation of burying a young girl, then digging up her remains, and then moving the body from state to state for more than a year. Abel Wolf, 35-year-old, and Denise Wolf, a 40-year-old, being held without bail in the Hill County Jail after being charged in Oklahoma with unlawful removal of a body. An autopsy will be done to determine the cause of death and whether the remains are those of Abel Wolf's 11-year-old daughter, Cheyenne. You know, we talk a lot about the FDA and some of the conflict of interests. This may or may not be one, but a former lawyer with Monsanto has now been hired as an advisor at the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. Michael Taylor, who worked at Monsanto's former vice president for public policy for 2 years until 2000, will advise the commissioner of the Food and Drugs, Margaret Hamburg. Taylor also worked as a food safety expert and research professor at George Washington University. The European and U.S. space agencies have taken a significant step towards teaming up to explore Mars. They've announced a joint initiative for robotic exploration of the Red Planet following a two-day summit in the United Kingdom. A Boston-area inventor has sued Kimberly-Clark Corporation, contending that the maker of Kleenex tissues and Huggies diapers had violated his patent for a device that detects bad breath. The man, Marv Friedman of Chelsea, Massachusetts, filed a lawsuit in Boston federal court saying that the Dallas-based consumer products maker is developing a visual indicating device for bad breath. That device, he says in court papers, works by detecting carbon dioxide and other gases given off by the bacteria that causes this stuff. Friedman said that he has already patented a similar device. We'll see what happens in court. Luck has struck for the third time for a Central Florida man. James Bush of South Daytona is one of three $1 million winners to claim their Firecracker Millionaire raffle prize so far from the Florida lottery. He bought the ticket in Port Orange, Florida. But this isn't the first time the 50-year-old has claimed a winning ticket. On his way to the Florida Lottery headquarters, he bought a billion-dollar Blockbuster scratch-off ticket, and then he won $1,000. And then a few years ago, he won $500,000 in the Gold Rush scratch-off game. How does this happen? Is it luck? Up next, Tony Davidson with us, author, Luck, Understanding Luck and Improving the Odds. That's next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Anthony Davidson is an attorney. He's long studied luck and its effect on risk-taking. Anthony has appeared on True Television, and his research on luck gives him the attitude that luck can be and is part of everyone's life. I agree with that. Here he is on Coast to Coast. Hey, Tony, how are you? There you are. Tony?
Yes.
How are you?
Good, thanks. Thanks for having me on the show tonight.
Good, me too. Now, this guy in Florida, three times a winner in the lottery? What luck, huh?
You got to love it. I mean, basically, three times is amazing, and it's lucky for him. But, you know, it's not the first time it's happened. There have been other three-time lottery winners. There have been slot winners, multiple slot machine winners of mega jackpots. It happens, but it's rare.
I've got a friend of mine here, and he bets a lot in the Illinois lottery, Tony, and he bets, the, you know, the pick three and all these other things that they do, or pick four, and he wins all the time. I mean, he wins $5,000, $10,000, $1,000, $50, but he wins all the time. I just wonder how much is he spending?
Well, you never know what that is. But, you know, for me, it's a great story. But the best part of it is that it opens up the dialogue about luck and what luck means in our lives. And, you know, people may not always hit a lottery or hit a big slot machine or win a lot of money, but they can find luck in their lives.
Tell me a little.
It serves as an inspiration.
Absolutely. But you believe that people can change their luck, don't you?
I do. I mean, some people, from an astrological standpoint, certainly many people believe that you can be born lucky. Sagittarius is a very lucky sign. But you can also change it. And really, the focus of our research and the focus of our book is to help people connect to luck on an everyday basis, to build a relationship with luck, to make it a part of their lives. So, and it's not just about money. It's every aspect of their lives.
Tony, are some people luckier than others, and is it attitude? What does it?
Well, I think, you know, attitude certainly is a part of it. It's a part of the picture. And again, I think from a luck perspective, there's a whole matrix that makes up luck, and I can get into that a little bit. But, you know, I think positive attitude certainly is important. If you're open, if you're willing to see things, then you're more amenable and can attract luck. But it's not just power of positive thinking. That doesn't get you there completely. From my perspective, luck has two sides. It's got an intellectual side, and it's got an emotional side. And the intellectual side is essentially people don't know everything. We don't have perfect predictive powers. We don't have the information. If we go into the unknown, if we go into an event that's uncertain and it turns out positively, that's good. That's good luck. That's the intellectual side. But there's also an emotional side. It's a force of nature, and that takes a little bit more work to connect to, and our book helps with that process of connecting to luck on a more emotional basis. So it takes some work to get in touch with luck. It's not simply just positive thinking. Think positively and good things will happen. You got to really work at it, and you have to work through what luck means to you as an individual to get there.
Are people born lucky as little kids, little babies?
You know, I think certain people, yes, they have super talents. They have super luck. And you could say that they're born lucky. But on the other hand, I firmly believe that everybody has luck in their lives. And if they work at it, they'll be at peace with it. They'll come to terms with it. They'll understand what it means to them. It's different for everybody. You know, for example, lottery winners. Sometimes these lottery winners win millions of dollars. They quit their jobs. They spend the money. They bust out. They go bankrupt. It's not always a positive experience for a lottery winner. So at the initial blush, when you look at it, they win a lottery. You could say they were born lucky. They hit a lottery. Unbelievable. But if they don't use that luck wisely, it actually could hurt them.
Now, tell me a little bit about the three numbers. Why is three a magical number?
You know what? Well, actually, you know, the story is based on the fact that he's hit the lottery three times. And three is a magical number. In numerology, three is a number of growth. In religion, it's got a special magical quality to it. It's representative of the Holy Trinity. In other religions, three plays a special role, the number three. And in fact, Shakespeare said that there's good luck in odd numbers. There's divinity in odd numbers, either in nativity, chance, or death. And so I think the idea there is basically we don't know where we came from necessarily. We don't know where we're going necessarily. So why should this thing we call life, this middle part, why should that be different? Why should we say luck and chance doesn't play a role there? Of course it does. And, you know, the dialogue, as I said, you know, a lottery winner to me just is a great opportunity to talk about luck. And the opportunity there is that hopefully people will view luck as an aspect of their personality, something to be developed as with any of their tastes in life and their other endeavors.
What about intuition? How much does that play a part in luck?
Well, I think intuition is, you know, it's certainly a part of it. I touched on that. I think there's a duality to luck. There's the intellectual side and there's the emotional side. The emotional side, it's a force of nature. To understand forces of nature, you have to have intuition. You have to have that animal instinct. And, you know, there are examples of it. that we use in everyday common language and parlance. Gamblers say that they're on a roll, right?
Sure. And you can feel it. You can feel it, Tony.
It's a force of nature. Sports, athletes, they're in the zone. They're just on an amazing hitting streak. They're slamming home runs all the time. So it's a force of nature. It's an energy. You can feel it. You have to have intuition to know both when you have it and when you don't have it. Because you cannot control luck. You cannot chase it. And so it's important to know when your luck's not there to kind of step back from it and have instinct both in going for it and recognizing when to step back from it and not push it.
Why do some casinos have what they call a cooler? There's a great movie on there with William Macy.
Yeah, I love that movie.
Yeah. I mean, is that real? Do they employ people like that who kind of like walk around next to some person who's hot at a table and then they start losing because he's got this negative energy around him?
Yeah, I love that movie. It was basically he just had negative energy. Whenever he showed up, people lost. He fell in love and he found his positive energy and people started winning, right? That was the movie. It's a great movie.
The best.
You know, in the past, I don't know. I don't have personal knowledge of them doing that. I personally believe that the odds, if you look, and again, our book is Understanding Luck and Improving the Odds. If you look at the odds in any gambling game, they're tough to beat. Slot machines, it's like 4 to 8%. Blackjack and craps are a little bit better. Roulette is like, you know, 5% house advantage. That house advantage, those odds are very tough to beat. They don't need to do anything other than have those odds working for them and the law of large numbers. So, you know, it, maybe in the past, in the 50s or the 40s, they had guys like that doing that. maybe they had guys running around winning to make people want to bet more to think that they could win. You know, the opposite of it. But yeah, I don't think they really need that, because once you get that house advantage built in there and you get enough people playing over a period of time, you're happy. You're making money. And in fact, you know, the gambling industry in America is enormous. Gross gambling revenues in the United States, in the most recent reported period, $90 billion.
You know what's funny, Tony? I've always heard, and I believe this, and I don't want to use gambling as the only example for luck here. We'll talk about some other areas. But if you go in and play and you don't care if you're going to win or lose, you have that kind of nonchalant attitude, there's a high likelihood you're going to win. But if you go in there going, oh, I got to win, I got to do, you're going to probably lose your shirt. How come?
Well, I don't disagree with you. You know, you can't play with scared money. Gamblers tell you that. If you have that negative energy, if you're reticent, it's going to be tough to win if you're playing scared. If you go in nonchalant, I agree, sometimes you can win. But again, I think, you know, for me, gambling is a statistical thing. It kind of fits in, for the most part, in the intellectual side of luck. It's tough to beat the odds. So whether in your mind you're casual or, you know, you're thinking about it completely, I'm not 100% sure it makes a difference. I like to be relaxed when I play because I think it helps it. But who knows? That may just be superstition. I think, you know, the difference between superstition and luck is superstition is really you want to avoid bad things happening. So you don't want to walk into a casino feeling bad about yourself. You know, and they tell you on TV, don't play if you're not feeling great.
That's exactly right.
Right.
Now, is it luck if you get the good job? Is it luck if you get the good relationship? Or do you work at it?
Look, I mean, basically, we all know that a lot of life is hard work. It's work. You know, you study in school, you get good grades. You put in the hours at work, you get rewarded for it. So you cannot take anything away from hard work. But at the same time, we all know that there's that element of luck in life that exists that you can't necessarily control, although we maintain, and in our book, we show people how to build a relationship with it. There's also that element of luck. And our premise here is that you don't throw luck away. You don't just say, well, what can I do about it? There's an element of luck, whether my boss likes me or he doesn't like me, whatever. Don't throw that away. Work on it. Try to understand it, and you can improve the odds of getting it in your life.
We're going to take phone calls with you, Tony, when we come right back. Plus, if you want to share your luck story with us, well, go ahead. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Next hour, remote viewer and physicist Russell Targ joins us. Do You See What I See? Memoirs of a Blind Biker. That'll be next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast with Tony Davidson, author of the book, Luck, Understanding Luck and Improving the Odds. How did you end up studying luck, Tony?
Well, you know, I was trained as a lawyer, went to law school, practiced law for many years in New York City on Wall Street. And as a lawyer, you want certainty. You want absolute certainty in whatever you do. And you try to eliminate the role of luck and chance in a case, in a document, in a proceeding. So when I retired from practicing law, what I wanted to do was figure out, what is this thing called luck that all these years I've been afraid to look at and have wanted to kind of push off to the side? I wanted to examine luck from a materiality standpoint. Luck is usually that 5% you can't control. You don't know. 95% hard work, you can get there, but there's a 5% chance, you know, you don't know. The jury might go this way, this juror might do that. But I wanted to get under the hood. I wanted to see if I could take that 5% and bring that down to 2% in my life. I wanted to understand luck and try to reduce the chance that that it played in my life. I wanted to build a relationship with it, to understand it, so that it wasn't like this smoking gun in my life.
Okay, let's take some calls. We'll pick it up by going to Blair in Sedonia. Welcome to the program. Hey, Blair, what's up?
Hey, first, George, thanks much for putting Sedona's Victoria Pratt Keating on your Sunday show for New Orleans.
She was dynamite.
Yeah. The 12 years I've lived here, we have a gentleman by the name of Chris Spiras, who's sort of like Mr. Sedona in music, too, so I'm sort of hoping. But I like the idea of luck in the psychological attitudes. There's two points I'd like to make. The first is, have an attitude of delicious uncertainty toward your future. What do you think?
Well, you know, I love the idea that life is full of mystery and that there's the possibility that anything could happen. I think luck, you know, luck plays a role in games so much, in sports, in games that we play, whether it's a child playing or an old lady feeding quarters into slots. Play is important in life. That uncertainty, that joy in life of surprise is important. So I do think that uncertainty can be delicious. But I also think that you have to have some parameters to understand when you're approaching uncertainty, how to deal with it. It makes it even more delicious.
See, Tony, if you're coming up, as it has happened to me, a intersection, and something tells you to slow down, don't go through it, and then a car comes speeding through its red light, and it would have smashed you, is that luck, or is there something more out there? There's a force, a power.
Well, again, there's this duality to luck. You can look at it rationally and say it was a coincidence, or you can look at it, you know, you're in this situation, and you were smart enough to think, gee, better stop, and you were fine from it. So there's that intellectual side, but there's also that instinct side, which just says, I was protected by that. I trusted my gut. I trusted my instinct. And it's very difficult, you know, at times to say which one is the controlling factor. I personally believe you have to look at both. You have to be smart, and you also have to trust your instinct.
Now let's go now to Cocoa Beach, Florida. Hey, Joe, take it away. You're up.
Hi, George. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
Great talking to you. I just wanted to share a little story with you. Everybody tells me and my wife how lucky we were. About 5 years ago, we were living in West Virginia, and we wanted to move to Florida, and we wanted to live on the ocean side, and we had done some research on the internet about houses and where we wanted to live. Well, I found this little community called Fairfoot Bay. And it had fishing ponds, a golf course, and beach access, and and we found a couple houses in there. We were talking to a real estate agent. We were ready to come down and buy a house. So we sold our big house up in West Virginia, moved down here, didn't have a job, didn't have a house. All our family and friends up there kept telling us we were crazy, but we knew we wanted to do it. So we moved down, and we got down here on a Saturday, and I told my wife, well, Sunday paper comes out, I'll look into the paper, and I'll get a job, and then we'll go talk to the realtor. Well, sure. Sunday paper came out. I went to six or seven different places. A guy hired me up here at Port Canaveral, and he happened to be from West Virginia, too. But I told my wife, I said, I'm not driving 35 miles one way to work, you know, for $8 an hour. So I told her, I said, let's go find a place up near Cape Canaveral, and I'll take this job and maybe rent something for 6 months or a year, and then we'll come back down and buy a house in Barefoot Bay. Well, that summer was the summer that Florida got hit by four hurricanes, and Barefoot Bay almost totally got wiped out. There was over 2,000 homes that got totaled in those hurricanes.
Nah.
If we just sunk all our money in one of those houses, who knows? You know, ours might have been one of those ones that got totaled.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's a prime example of, you know, not having total information and going into a situation that was uncertain, and it was a good outcome, so it's good luck.
Yeah, but you also, everybody told us how lucky we were.
Oh, yeah, but you also trusted your instinct in taking the other job and, you know, and avoiding that.
Yeah.
So,
and it's been great ever since. I mean, well, you know, we live in a condominium now, real nice condominium in Cocoa Beach. And
you know what I love about that?
I work security at the port. It's great.
You know what I love about that story, too? I mean, it's not just simply, luck is not just simply about money. It's not just about winning a lottery or having certain dollars. It's and especially in these economic, you know, challenging times, you know, we kind of have to shift our focus and shift our priorities and say what's important to us. And that was luck because you were situated okay. Your life was okay.
Right.
You know, your life with your wife in a new and important move, you were okay.
Right.
And that you can't put a dollar and cents on that. And so you're saying, I mean, this big event for you was incredibly lucky, but it wasn't necessarily tied to just money. It was your well-being. And that's everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because out of the six or seven people that I went to talk to, I think Sunday the paper came out, I started making some phone calls, and out of the six or seven phone calls that I made, only one person that was actually doing the hiring talked to me and said, well, you want to come up and I'll talk to you. So I came up and talked to him, and he hired me right away.
That's
great. A great story.
It's a great story. And, you know, keep focused on that. That luck isn't just simply about bucks. It's about well-being and you know, having a good life.
Absolutely. And I think those two areas are more important, Tony, don't you?
Yes, I do. And again, I mean, you know, we started the hour talking about lottery winners and, you know, money, money, money. But the roots of this thing called luck, it historically, it goes back thousands of years, and people were looking in nature, and they were looking, you know, at the fundamental things in life about their health and their happiness and their well-being, and it wasn't necessarily tied to money.
Northridge we go, California. Susan, it's your turn. Hi, Susan.
Oh, hi. I can't believe it. You have this guest on right after I lost the lottery again.
How lucky can you get, right?
Well, I was just wondering, I know this might be silly, but is it possible for a person to kind of be born with sort of like haplessness around them? I've never really had luck in anything.
Well, you know what? This is, I mean, it's the perfect question for me because there are people out there, Susan, mm-hmm. that say, I just am not a lucky person. And the book that we wrote had those people in mind because what we really feel is that everybody has luck. If you examine your life, and if you're open in your spiritual life and in your intellectual life to figuring out what this thing is called luck, and you will find that you have it in your life. And it's very difficult to say, I have no luck or I'm hapless. And in our book, what we do is we help people create what's called a personal luck profile, where you look at your astrological sign, you look at numerology, and you personalize it to your name and your birth date.
Perfect.
And you can incorporate that in your daily living. And we also have a concept called the diversified luck portfolio, where we have short-term luck assets and long-term luck assets. And if you start to examine where luck plays a role in your life, short-term things like collecting and playing games and sports, long-term things like relationships and careers and health. I mean, if you look at these assets that we have in our life, not just money, it's a part of it, but it's not the whole thing. If you look at the whole portfolio of life, you will find that there's always luck in your life somewhere, and you need to keep it balanced so that you always have luck working for you.
How do you change it if you've had like whenever something is about to go really great in my life, something intercedes and destroys it, and I have nothing to do with it?
That black cloud comes over you,
yeah.
Doesn't it?
Well, you know what? Sometimes these things, there are a lot of things in life that happen that you cannot fully rationalize. But if you examine them with an intensity and a focus, and with hindsight, sometimes you realize that these things that in the short term may have appeared to be difficult and challenging, in the long term may not have been. And also, I mean, people that firmly believe in astrology, there's certain astrological points where, you know, for example, Saturn enters your chart, it can create a period of difficulty. So when those pass and good planets like Venus and Jupiter come into your stars, you might have a little bit easier time doing things. So in part, it's timing as well.
Let's go next to Bill in West Hartford, Connecticut. Hey, Bill.
Hi, George. Hi, this is Bill in West Hartford, Connecticut. How are you doing? Hi.
Great.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, Bill.
Hi, I'm going to talk about luck, not in the sense of money at all, not in the sense of the lottery. I'm not into money at all. I'm into love, sex, relationships, girlfriends, because I'm someone who is unfortunately very unlucky in love. I do happen to be in a nice apartment, a nice Section 8 apartment complex here in Connecticut, West Hartford, Connecticut, and I have a nice kitty cat I'm looking at, tuxedo-colored named Baby, black and white cat.
Well, how can you say you're not lucky in love? You've got a beautiful little cat.
Well, but
you can love a cat.
I don't have a girlfriend, and I'm age 59, the same age as George Norrie, and if I hadn't gone to massage parlors in the 1980s, I would be a virgin today. I would be a virgin today. That's
oh, Bill,
bad.
You don't have to tell us all that, Billy. Trust me.
What do they call that? TMI, right?
Well, how do I overcome my inability to find a sexy atheist girlfriend? I am an atheist, someone who likes the space program. Is possibly Richard C. Hoagland's wife available?
I guess, you know, I have a couple of things.
Yeah.
I have a couple of points on that with relationships.
Yeah.
I mean, look, one of the premises here is that people are lucky. Not everybody's lucky in the same things. Some people are lucky with money. Some people, you know, you said you had a nice apartment, blah, blah, blah. Some people are lucky with money. Some people are lucky with relationships. People connect to it on different levels and in different ways. So some people, you know, I personally think some people may not be lucky in love. Now, can you work at that? Yes, you can. How do you work at that? We talk in the book about the law of large numbers. You know, the more you do of something, the better your chances of success. So
is that the law of odds?
That's the law of large numbers.
Okay.
So
almost the same thing.
Right. So, yes. I mean, odds are basically, the law of large numbers is based on odds. So,
mm-hmm.
So in other words, you know, if you felt like you weren't having success there and you stopped dating, well, you're not going to get lucky in love because you're not dating. But if you start dating again and you see, you know, various people, you increase your opportunities to find love. And in addition to that, you know, I was thinking about it today. If you're not lucky in a relationship, well, what do you do? Do you just say, do you let that one aspect of your luck life predominate, or do you do other things? There are other things that you can do. How do you offset that? Talking about a diversified luck portfolio. For me, I would work on your health. You know, are you fit? Are you in shape? Are you doing everything that you should be doing? Or in this period where you're not walking in love, can you improve your luck and health by doing other things?
Because sometimes, Tony, as you know, if you improve those other things, the thing that you really want may just fall right into place.
Right. Right. You may join. You may say, you know what? I could work out a little bit more. Maybe you join a gym and maybe you meet people through the gym. I don't know. But
yeah.
But that's the kind of idea. Instead of saying that there's this one aspect of my life that I don't feel lucky at, instead of focusing on that thing, you look at your portfolio, you take it, it's like a stock. You got 20 stocks, one's bad. you keep looking at that one? No, you look at your whole portfolio. So you look at your diversified luck portfolio and you figure out, okay, this one's bad. What can I work on? What's good? And let me focus on that for a while. And that way you have luck in your life. And hopefully by doing these other things, you'll improve luck in your relationships.
We've got a numerologist, comes on the program quite a bit, Glynis McCants, the numbers lady, and she has even recommended to people days not to get, let's say, operations, because she thinks they're a toxic moment. And that seems to work out for a lot of people, Tony.
That's interesting.
What quick techniques could you offer people to start changing their luck? Are there any?
I think there are. I mean, I've mentioned two. The first is this diversified luck portfolio, which I love that concept, that there are short-term assets that we have that deal with luck. That can include gambling. But you know what? If you're gambling, playing lotto or casinos or horses, and you're not lucky in that, you need to diversify that. You need to get involved with some sports. You need to play games like backgammon, this thing, that thing. You can do some collecting. In these economically challenged times, you can go bargain hunting. You can go to thrift stores looking for, for great finds or great bargains. There are a ton of ways in the short term to play with luck. And then in the long term, there's, working on relationships, working on your health, working on your career. If you're not having luck with short-term things, then focus on your job. Pump that up a little bit. So you're always working your diversified luck portfolio. You view luck not as a singular thing, but as a whole package in your life. And each one of these things relates to you and what you like. You can also look at, I mentioned that we have a personal luck profile. The second half of the book helps people chart their numbers, their astrological signs. You can kind of figure out periods of time where luck is going to be more easily in your life. And if you're going through a challenging time, if Saturn's in your stars, you got to accept that. You got to acknowledge that, you know what, it may be challenging.
Well, let's
so
go
those,
to
those are some techniques.
Grab a call, quick one in New Mexico. Go ahead, Joe.
Hi, Tony. George.
Hi.
Listen, the person behind this voice, I've listened to some of your previous callers. Nobody's unluckier than I am. Nobody. I would sadly and regrettably, but sincerely invite your scrutiny of this to see if I'm a phony or just for real. I don't know of anybody else. Very briefly, they talk a lot about giving people a second chance. And, a veteran that gave honorable service to the United States isn't allowed a first chance. Very briefly, I'm from New York City, and I finally got enough money together to buy my own cab only because I was in a crash. Somebody ran a red light and ran into me. I ended up in St. Vincent Hospital in Greenwich Village, opening my eyes. And I said, "Where am I?" And they said, "This is a hospital, sir. You must have been in an accident." And
you survived the accident.
Well, yes, sir, I did.
But, and that's lucky, isn't it?
Well, I hope so. Or Joey is now a ghost.
Well, I'll tell you the truth. It would be more merciful if I were a ghost, because I'm being tortured right here in the United States of America, not North Korea, not Iran.
Well, I tell you what I want you to do, Joe, is I want you to email Tony when you can. Tony, do you have a website available, or do you take emails from people?
I actually don't, George, but certainly if he wants to chat on your website, I could look at that.
Okay, we'll do that. Tony, I want to thank you for spending the hour with us. We were very lucky to get a hold of you tonight.
Oh, and it was my pleasure to be on. As I said at the outset, it's my favorite subject, talking about luck, and I enjoyed the dialogue with you tonight, George.
All right. We'll be back in a moment with Russell Targ, remote viewer on Coast to Coast AM.